Hey, this is Jay Young with King Operating. Have you ever considered paying less money in taxes? Would you like to do what the wealthy do and invest in oil and gas? Go on our website, kingoperating.com, and get my book about our model, ADD, Acquire, Develop, and Divest, or call our number 214-420-3000 to talk to somebody today about investing in oil and gas and saving money on your taxes.
The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey everybody, it's Jay Young with The Jay Young Show. Thank you so much for coming today. Another episode of learning from successful entrepreneurs. You know, if you're a high school, college student, If you're out of college and you're wondering, you got the job that you thought maybe that you liked and didn't know, let's talk to Max DeZara. Max, thanks for being on the show today.
It's my pleasure, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I look forward to this. This is going to be great. You know, I mean, it's successful people like you that help mentor other people. And by telling your story, you're telling people that, hey, you know what? It's not easy. And you know, the places I vacation today or the things I do today are the hard work and the groundwork that I did for years and years and years. So I don't want people to give up too early. I want people to see that, you know, there's sometimes a road that we have to choose. And if we go down that road and it's not the right one, maybe we need to cut it back. So what I want to do is Max DeZara is in Chicago, spends a lot of his year there, or a lot of the time there now. I know he has kids in Colorado and so forth, which he'll get into in just a minute. Max, tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up and kind of where you got started. How did you get started with your first job?
Yeah, happy to. So my background is this. So I grew up in a very entrepreneurial environment. My father lived the American dream. So my dad was an immigrant, immigrated here from Europe in the late 50s. Sort of classic American success story. He came here with a suitcase full of clothes, a few hundred dollars, a tremendous amount of hope and aspiration, an extraordinary work ethic, and an entrepreneurial spirit. And at the time, my dad spoke four languages. English wasn't one of them. So when he immigrated to Chicago, he worked three jobs. He saved as much money as he could. And then in the early 60s, he was one of the first people to advertise on the Spanish television network, Telemundo. His mother language was Spanish. Wow. And I really feel incredibly fortunate that my earliest memories in life were going to work with my father in and around the family business. And if I wanted to spend time with him, that's sort of how we did it. I'm the eldest. I have two younger brothers. So, Jay, my life was sort of predestined, right? I was going to grow up and ultimately take over this little business. And my dad did an amazing job building this business over a long period of time. But I feel very blessed in that we went through all the social, economic categories. You know, when I was very young, we were really poor. And then we went from, you know, poor to lower middle class to middle class to upper middle class. And that was sprinkled out pretty evenly throughout my life. So I feel really fortunate that we went through those various stages. But fast forward, I grew up, I went to work in the family business. I worked in our family business a couple years, decided early on that I wanted to do something outside of our family business. And I think for me, it was based largely on the fact that I had a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for what my father had accomplished, and something inside of me, Jay, wanting to prove to myself and maybe on some level prove to my dad that I could be successful, you know, independent of the family business. So there I was in my early 20s. I didn't know what I wanted to do because I never thought about what I was going to do. So I wound up interviewing. I had a few different offers, and I wound up accepting a position with a highly regarded executive recruiting firm here in Chicago. And I spent a couple years at this recruiting firm. I really, really enjoyed the work quite a bit and had a real sort of propensity to it, and decided early on that I wanted to spend the first half of my career, first part of my career in the human capital and talent acquisition industry.
So you're joining, or you're the executive. Where did you go to college? How much college experience?
Yeah, so I actually dropped out of college. I went to school for a couple years here in Chicago. I really had a desire to kind of get into business. So I started working for my father full time. I was going to school at night, and never finished. So I dropped.
Wow, that's great. I mean, that's great because, I mean, so successful as you are now, I mean, you don't have to get that college degree. So it's all about you have to have a plan. You may not have a college degree, but you have to have a plan. So that's...
Well, I'll come back to that because I've been incredibly fortunate throughout my career to have been exposed to and mentored by some incredibly talented, bright, accomplished people. And so it's provided an opportunity for me to really learn an awful lot through the success of other people and the failures of other people, I might
add. Wow. Okay. Good.
So I started my career in executive recruiting. At the age of 25, I decided that I wanted to start my own executive search firm, which I did. And I was very fortunate to have hired and trained and developed some extremely talented people. Together, we built, it's called the Carlyle Group. We built the Carlyle Group into one of the largest retained executive search firms in the country. And then we were approached by a large strategic acquirer. They were headquartered in New York, traded on the NYSE, and their chairman had raised a little over $100 million of equity capital, and his objective was to aggregate the executive search and staffing industry. And they had a search firm, which was sort of the crown jewel in their portfolio. We sold our company to this firm, and as a result of the merger or sale, it created what at the time was one of the top 10 retained executive search firms in the world. So we had offices in New York, Chicago, London, Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Singapore. And it was a great opportunity for myself and my partners to monetize the equity value that we had created in our business. Chance to go from a regional and national platform to a global platform and work with people that I really held in high regard and had a lot of respect for. So shortly after the merger, I was elected to the board, promoted to vice chairman of the company, and I had responsibility for our private equity practice. And really what that meant was that I had a small team around the globe supporting me, and we served the private equity community. And what really essentially that meant was we were retained to help them recruit board directors, CEOs, C-level operating executives across a wide variety of different portfolio companies. And that experience provided an extraordinary opportunity to really learn about the PE world, but really from an outside looking in perspective.
Wow.
I was really drawn to the handful of private equity firms that placed a disproportionate amount of value on executing a leader-led strategy, on working with operating executives that had really deep domain expertise and that could provide some perspective on how to unlock value at the portfolio company level, and then pair them up with a transaction professional. The overwhelming majority of PE firms, Jay, are comprised of uber smart finance professionals, right? I mean, uber smart, but I was always a little puzzled by the traditional model because while they're uber smart finance professionals, they have no operating experience. They've never, frankly, most of them have never worked in an operating company, but yet they're making strategic decisions and deploying billions and billions of dollars of capital, investing in operating companies, but really didn't bring that experience. So I found that a bit interesting. So I left in very good terms at the end of 2004 to start what is today Akoya Capital. We're one of the sort of preeminent private investment firms in the country. We focus on a leader-led and sector-focused strategy within the private equity world. So we invest primarily in the lower end of the middle market and operating companies. And we define that, you know, business is typically between 30 and 150 million of revenue, between 4 and 15 million of EBITDA is really where we like to start. And today the model is comprised of, we have three sectors that we invest in. Each one is led by an industry icon. So, you know, my partners are individuals who spent decades within the industries in which we invest at extraordinarily, you know, high level and accomplished operating roles within those businesses. They've joined us as full equity partners. We have a 5-person transaction team who are those uber smart finance professionals I referred to earlier that provide a lot of the deal evaluation and deal structuring and a lot of the technical attributes that are required to facilitate transactions. Proud to say that we, in July, we completed our 19th platform investment. across the three sectors that we focus on, along with about 30 add-ons. So we've been quite active in terms of investing capital and deploying capital. We look and feel more like a family office than a traditional private equity firm. And by that, I mean myself and my partners are all high net worth individuals. So we invest a meaningful amount of our own personal capital in each investment. And then we have, you know, deep, trusted, well-established relationships with a handful of ultra high net worth family offices that we'll bring into on a deal by deal basis. So we set up an SPV, special purpose vehicle, for every investment. We invest a meaningful amount of our own capital, and then we basically raise capital deal by deal.
Wow. Okay. That's good. That is very, very good. I'll tell you, that's a handful. So you've gone from the executive search business that you started and sold it with the vice chairman, went all the way up there, and then sold out, got your own office or money and family office, if you will.
That's
and
right.
Then started the Akoya Capital. So now you're just doing deals, and you're looking at companies that do 30 to 150 million
in revenue.
In revenue, and why do they need money? Why do these companies? I mean, if they're making, and you said, you know, they have to have EBITDA or whatever. I mean,
yeah, right.
Yeah. Why do they need money?
So the attributes that we look for, these are businesses that, while they're in three different sectors, the common denominator is that every business we've invested in, they're owner-operator build businesses. So we're investing right alongside the wealth creator and business builder. They're businesses that are fundamentally healthy, so we don't invest in distressed or turnarounds, right? They're all fundamentally healthy businesses. But they're businesses that are at an inflection point in the organizational life cycle. And businesses that I would describe them as underachieving to their full potential. And they're typically under-resourced, and they're typically under-resourced across three dimensions. They're financially under-resourced. So in many respects, it's become a lifestyle business, right? And the founder is making $4, $5, $6, $7, $8 million a year, and no reason to bet the ranch to take the company to the next level. So part of the motivation is simply what I had at Carlyle, where a disproportionate amount of their wealth is tied into their business. So part of the catalyst is they want to create some liquidity. They want to take some chips off the table, monetize some of the equity value they have in the company, and get on a much stronger balance sheet, right? So, So one of the resources that, you know, they're under-resourced financially, and we're very comfortable paying a fair price for the companies and bringing significant capital to support growth, be it organic or acquisitive.
Okay.
An area they're under-resourced in almost every case is from a human capital perspective. And we're looking for businesses that have transformational opportunities where, under our guidance, we can double, triple, quadruple the size of the company. And I learned a long time ago, it's really all about the quality of the people, right? So we think with the end in mind, which is if we're looking to invest in a company that we can triple or quadruple, got to make sure you have the right organizational structure in place to support scaling the business and taking it to the next level. As you can probably appreciate, we take the people piece pretty seriously. So, you know, we're very comfortable investing in and around people to transform a business from what might have been a family-run business to a professionally managed business.
Right.
The third area they're under-resourced is from a strategic perspective. And by that, I mean the founders have done an amazing job getting the business to a certain level, but they're astute enough to realize that they really want and need additional resources to take it to the next threshold. And as a result, place a real premium on working with our partners, right? Again, Jay, our partners are, these are folks who've been there, have done it before. They've literally created hundreds of millions of dollars, and in a few instances, billions of dollars of shareholder value throughout their careers. And so, you know, to have an opportunity to have one of our partners invest their own personal capital in this company, serve on the board as executive chairman, and, you know, serve as a meaningful strategic resource and asset to that business owner is incredibly valuable. So those are the attributes that we look for, and those are the types of investments that we're typically drawn to.
All right. That's very interesting. And I know I could go into a lot of questions with that. What I really want to get to and what I really want to talk about is that people, because you have been around so many different people in your career. I think instead of talking about I mean, how much money do you put into a deal? How much control, or do you get all that? I don't want to do that. I'd much rather finish this segment, if you will, just talking about people and what you've learned about people, because the deal is one thing, but the people, obviously, you can have good people and a bad deal, or you get a bad, you know, bad people and a good deal, right. You know, all this kind of stuff. But tell me what you've learned. How many different personalities? You know, you hear about these personality tests that people take, and you know, there's the A, the B, the. How many different personalities do you think they are? And can you just kind of tell us about what do you think? What do you think needs to be the most to be the most successful in my career? What do I need to do, or what could I do? And tell me different type of personalities first.
Yeah. So I've been very fortunate, as I said, you know, my executive search career. I literally, you know, I've interviewed literally thousands of people.
Oh man, absolutely.
I placed hundreds of C-level executives, and at Akoya, we've got 6 unbelievably accomplished operating executives. So, you know, I'd say some of the common themes around what it really takes to be successful from a leadership perspective, resiliency, empathy, tenacity, high tolerance for ambiguity, right? You know, high tolerance for sort of coping mechanisms. So, you know, because a lot of stuff comes at people in a lot of different directions. So the ability to cope with things. And, you know, if you think about a great athlete, think about a quarterback, right? The greatest quarterbacks are able to kind of slow the game down, right? So they see everything in slow motion. As everything is chaotic going around them, they're able to stay calm and really grounded and present in the moment. I see a lot of the same parallels with people who are extremely successful throughout their careers. I think one of the other attributes I find is sort of an extreme ownership from the CEO or the leader. Mm. You know, recognizing that they may not have all the answers, likely don't have all the answers, but they're accountable for their results, right? And right. And the other thing that I've kind of lived my life by is I've surrounded myself with incredibly bright, motivated people. I've often joked that if I'm the smartest guy in the room, I'm likely in the wrong room. So, you know, the ability to kind of check your ego at the door, the ability to just get the best, literally the best people in the best positions, and people who may know far more than you do about a particular subject, and having this confidence and self-security in yourself to be comfortable with that. Those are some of the attributes.
I mean, so, how many different personalities of people do you think there are? Do you think there's 4, 2, 3, 4? I mean, there's the introvert, there's the extrovert. How many different tests have you taken, or have you been associated with them?
Yeah, we work with a couple of kind of assessment tools, and frankly, I'll just tell you, they're nothing more than tools. I mean, we use it really more as a developmental tool. We use it as a way to flush out what might be a catastrophic hire. I mean, if someone is really off the reservation, it'll sort of pick up on that. But we use those assessments as a way to guide the reference checking process, and as really as a way to onboard an executive by recognizing where they might have blind spots, where they might have some sort of deficiencies, and how we can really support them. But we don't rely on those assessments to guide our decision around go or no go relative to, you know, recruiting or retaining, C-level executives across our portfolio.
Okay. All right. Good. But how important are the, I should say, on your teams that you're investing? I think you said 19 investments that you've made.
That's correct.
So you've made investments in these, and obviously with your own money. So you're obviously wanting to know anything and everything you can about that business prior to going in. But also, too, who's going to be the management? Is it more important? Are the people more important, or is it the asset that's more important?
It's always, always for us, it's people first, always. Yeah. It's a partnership. I mean, you can have an A team and a B company and do really well, but you can't have an A company and a B team. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster. So it's always the catalyst for us. The first box we check is always, you know, do we have a team that we feel confident that we can back? Or, you know, Jay, a third of our investments, the founders are at a point where they really want to transition out of the CEO role and morph into a board role, or they're looking for quality or balance of life. So there's an understanding coming in that we're going to recruit a new CEO. But having an openness and a willingness to support that endeavor and provide the resources is critically important. So again, in our view, it's always people first. Then it's, you know, then it's industry, understanding the macroeconomics of the industry. And then we look at that specific company in terms of how they're positioned within the industry and based on the strength of the people.
Wow. Very neat. Very neat. Cycles. I mean, there's a lot of cycles, especially in our business. We're in the oil and gas business. We've seen a lot
of cycles. Talk about cycles. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I tell you, it is definitely cyclical. And over 100 years worth of my families. Okay. So it's all about the team. So I'm 20 years old. I'm 25 years old. And what do I need to do to be successful? I mean, I know that you're the sum of the 8 people you hang around, or, you know, whatever people have said in the past. What is it that I need to do? Grab onto a good team. Is there any type books that you read or listen to? Audio books are so popular now. Is there anything in particular that you would suggest to somebody?
Yeah, there's a business that actually we've been looking at quite seriously making an investment in. And one of the founders is really an icon. His name is Jocko Willink, Willink. And he has a podcast. He's got about 3 million followers on his podcast. He's written several books. One notably is called Extreme Ownership. And Jocko, by way of background, had an incredibly accomplished career as a Navy SEAL. He spent 20 years as a SEAL. He had a couple deployments in Afghanistan and Iraq. The movie The American Sniper, the sniper actually was part of Jocko's team. And so he spent 10 years on the ground, and then he spent the following 10 years basically training SEALs and then training trainers that were training SEALs. So he took a lot of the key learnings that he learned as a Navy SEAL and a special ops and, going into Iraq and basically having to win over the insurgents, because, you know, as he says, the easy part is just kind of blowing stuff up and killing people. That's the easy part, right? The tough part is trying to convert, right, the locals and the community and dealing with the insurgents. And so he's written a couple of books. He's got a, you know, very loyal following in his podcast. And that's one thing, that's one area I would highly recommend to young people in terms of establishing a great foundation to kind of leverage your career off on.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I mean, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, somebody had brought up the same book, Extreme Ownership. I'm like, oh, wow, man. I was trying to look back at my notes. Was that yesterday or the day before?
There you go. You know,
but I tell you what, you're right. I mean, exactly right. You want to be able to take ownership, and you want to hire people that will take ownership, and it's like their own, and they care, and they're going to do anything and everything they can to keep pushing that ball forward. So that's great. Well, I tell you what, let's talk about some of the good things. So the benefits. So you've worked hard all your life. You put in your hours. Your kids are, I think you have one left in college.
I do. Right? Yeah. So I have a daughter who's 23. She graduated a year ago. She's just started her career at Accenture. She's living in Chicago. She's off to a great start. I couldn't be prouder of her.
That's great.
I have a son who's a senior at Boulder, University of Colorado in Boulder. He'll be graduating in May. And just a wonderful human being. And I'm really excited to see how his career takes shape. We spent the better part of the summer in Park City, Utah. Things in Chicago were getting a little sketchy there for a while with COVID and some civil unrest here in Chicago. And we went out to Park City, rented a house for a month, and just continued to extend it. So we actually spent 3 months in Park City. And it was just phenomenal to be out in the mountains and be hiking every day and mountain biking and fly biking. And it was just amazing, really amazing.
That's great. Good for you.
I'm at a point now where I'm able to just dial it back ever so slightly. I'm really aspiring to, in 21, my aspiration is to kind of work a 4:40 schedule, you know, 4 days a week and 40 weeks a year, and provide, you know, try to create a little bit better balance and quality of life, because it's been a bit of a grind. But right. Fortunately, I'm at that point now where I think I can do that and not feel terribly guilty about it.
Well, that's good. Good. That's great. Good for you. That's what we all work for. We all work to get to that level, and you just get in your business and you just kind of moving. All of a sudden, at one point, you go, "Wow, wait, maybe I could liquidate this and enjoy the finer things in life, which is spending time and going for at least." Did you go for a week or 2 weeks and end up staying for a couple of months or so? I mean,
I originally went for a month.
I
rented a house for a month, and then we just extended it for another month and then another month. And sometimes I wonder why we ever came back and continued.
Well, I'm sure you miss Chicago and the friends.
I know. It's an amazing, no, you're right. I love Chicago. It's home. Yeah. No, it's one of the best cities in North America, at least 7 months out of the year.
Yeah. I agree. And I know a lot of people that is their favorite city. When they say New York, but Chicago is just so much easier to get around. It's like cleaner and just a lot easier. So
not to sound hokey, but Chicago's it's a Midwestern town, and there's Midwestern values and morals, and people are just genuinely nice. And you see, you get that here, and you don't find that many other places in the country.
Right. So are you in Tiger 01 or?
I'm in Tiger 02, which is a new form group in Chicago. We have 15 members. They're just really great dudes and dudettes. I mean, we've got a couple women that I'm just blown away by. It's great. I mean, I've already learned a lot, and our chair is terrific, Ron Diamond. And there's been a several social aspects. So it's beyond just the monthly meeting and kind of sharing ideas. I'm actually developing meaningful friendships, which is really rewarding and something I didn't really anticipate. It's a bonus.
Well, yeah. Great. Are y'all doing the meetings in person, or are you doing them on Zoom?
We're doing them in person.
In person. Okay. Yeah. I know we're
maintaining social distance, and we've got this amazing venue. One of the partners owns a really amazing facility here in Chicago. Comfortably seats like 200 people. And so we've got our 15 people there. So we're able to maintain social distance, and it's great.
Good. That's great.
Nice to be able to see people in person in a safe environment.
I have not been to a Tiger meeting in person. I've been to at least 100 meetings, and it's really weird not going to meetings, and especially in person. I've been to some Zoom meetings, but we're taking our group now. We have three groups in Dallas, and we're saying, okay, if you want to go in Zoom, you come this day, but if you want to come in person, this day, so they kind of split it up. This month, I couldn't do a couple of days ago, so I'm going to do the Zoom next week. So, but it is. I mean, one of the reasons why I love Tiger is to make sure that I can, go to some of the meetings, obviously in person, but also when I travel. I mean, I love to travel to Chicago, go to a Chicago meeting. I was real good friends with Rick Herrig. Before he went on, but I go to a Tiger meeting one day and stay there and go to some appointments the next day, see some clients and just get to know different people.
I miss traveling quite a bit. I really miss traveling.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand. Okay, well, what I'd like to do now is just kind of wrap things up. Is there anything that you're telling your kids now? Or I asked a guy not long ago, I said, what would you tell yourself if you were 20 years old? And he said, I wouldn't listen, So is there anything? So I said, okay, but what if you would listen? What would you tell yourself if you were 20 years old and whatever? But is there anything in particular that you're telling your kids or if you was stopped in a Starbucks line and somebody said, oh my gosh, you're Max Lazara, man, you're successful. I know you. And what would you give me one piece of advice if you could? What would it be here?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I have that sage, kind of silver bullet, I just tell my kids, really follow your passion, find something that you really genuinely care about.
How easy is that to do?
I've been really fortunate. I've gravitated to two industries that, now granted, I sort of created these opportunities for myself, but I gravitated to two industries which lend themselves extremely well to my personality. I really enjoy what I do, and I thoroughly enjoy who I do it with. And that's the advice I give my kids, is find something that you will get, genuine satisfaction and joy out of. And more importantly, make sure it's with a group of people that you respect and that you like and that you can have fun with. Because that's the key, you know?
Right, right. And I don't even really know if it's the industry at that particular second, or if it's the people that you get in with and you have fun and you're celebrated and you're a part of a team, you know, type deal. So when people say, you know, I don't know if I want to do for a living. Well, the best thing you can do is to find a growing industry and
yeah,
with both feet and find yeah, people that you like working with. And it's not fun or it's not easy.
Yeah. So I had a long conversation with my daughter last night. We had this conversation. One of the things I think about this now, I was really encouraging her to, you know, kind of start to really think about is celebrate, which I do this quite frequently, celebrate failures and celebrate mistakes, right? Because, you know, we've made plenty of them along the way. We've had plenty of failures along the way. For me personally, the best learning has come through mistakes and failures, right? And so we here at Akoya, we literally will celebrate failures. I mean, we'll do a post-mortem. It helps us really understand how we can improve, how we might do things differently, how we might do things better. There's no judgment. You know, we've created a very safe environment, and we'll literally take a bottle of champagne and celebrate a failure. And I've tried to work with my children, like, it's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes. That's really, it's how you push yourself. It's how you push yourself out of your comfort zone. And it's really how you learn and how you grow.
That's great. That's great. It reminds me of one of my fellow Tiger members here, Greg Alexander. Greg said, on our sales meetings, every Friday, he said, okay, who made the dumbest mistake yesterday when they were trying to sell something? You know, we have $100 or $1,000 or whatever to the person that made the dumbest mistake yesterday when they were trying to close the sale and the reason why they didn't, you know, whatever. I mean, he's like,
right.
You're exactly, that's awesome. I mean, because you do celebrate the mistakes and finding, okay, hey, this isn't the right way to do it. You know, and it's good that you didn't, continue doing that.
Right.
It's good that you changed up what you were doing so you could be more successful and make better investments. So that's great. That's great. All right. Well, Max, I tell you what, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you so much for showing up. I appreciate you, being here, but also, you know, having all the different knowledge that you have and sharing with us. Thank you so much for sharing.
That's my pleasure. I was honored to be here, Jason. Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to meeting you in person sometime.
Me too.
Yeah. And I will do that. I will come to, your next vacation. I'm going to come to your next vacation. No, I'm just kidding. Your wife may not like that.
Well, actually, I've had a house rented in Santa Barbara for the winter, so I'll be down.
Oh, well, that's a great place. I think
you're welcome to come down.
I'll knock on your door.
You're absolutely welcome to come down.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much. I'd love to. I hang around people like you. That's the reason why I wanted to join Tiger, you know, 10 years ago, was to hang around people like you, learn from it, learn from your mistakes, move on, and be happy, you know, because you're definitely in a place in your life to where you had some extreme success, you're enjoying it, you're giving back by doing these type of interviews and talking to different people. So thank you very much again, Max. Thank you so much. And everybody, thank you for coming on the show today and listening and Max DeZara. Max is a very successful entrepreneur. We appreciate him being here today. Everybody, just do what you do with the YouTube subscriber channel. Do all this stuff. You know, forward this message on to other people. Listen to people like him that are successful, and just give back. So, thank you very much for being on the show today. And
my pleasure,
Max. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. All right. So long. Bye bye. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.